Call our meeting to order. We do not have a quorum yet. That might be obvious to anyone in the room. But I would like to get started because we have a number of bills that need to be heard and have a number of testifiers that would like to be heard on this bill. So with that, Representative Simon, would you like to introduce your bill? We can't move it yet.
Yes, that's right. I'll introduce the bill, House File 1083. I will later have an amendment, but obviously I can't process this right now, just a drafting error. First, I just want to thank the committee, thank the folks who have come on both sides here to testify. We'll say in an era of high degree of partisanship and kind of political rancor, it's refreshing, I think, to have a bill like this, which brings together and bridges people who aren't ordinarily on the same side. I'm pleased to work with the Coalition for Impartial Justice, which includes over 30 statewide organizations and stakeholder groups. And you've got groups like the Minnesota State Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO not only signing off on the same legislation, but literally signing a letter together saying that they're in favor of this, as well as people of both parties, not only on the bill, on this committee and otherwise, but interest groups from across the state. And so I'm pleased to support something that has garnered so much bipartisan support and support across the ideological spectrum. I want to walk through for members who aren't as familiar with this issue, because it's been around for a while, about why we're really here and what the impetus for this bill is. This is a bill that naturally will change the way that we select and evaluate and retain our judges in Minnesota from top to bottom. And the reason for it really stems most recently from the White decisions. It's a group of decisions by the same name that came down a few years ago from the federal courts, including, but not limited to, the U.S. Supreme Court. And the bottom line is this. It was actually a case that originated here in Minnesota and made its way and a couple iterations through the federal courts. The bottom line under White is that there were three things that Minnesota used to forbid, but that now are legal, not only in Minnesota, but we know due to White across the country. And they are these. It used to be pre-White that judges and judicial candidates were constrained as to how and to what extent they could raise money. Now those constraints are gone. It used to be that judges could neither seek nor accept certain partisan political endorsements. Now that constraint is gone, so they can and they now freely do so. And the third and most damaging is that judges were formally in Minnesota barred from expressing their opinions or announcing their positions on issues that were likely to come before them on the bench. And now that very, very critical prohibition is gone. So what does that mean? What does it mean that a judge running for office, whether an incumbent or a challenger, can now announce a position on an issue likely to become before him or her on the bench? It means that judges are now advocates seeking outcomes in elections. And in any other election contest that I can think of, my own, a contest for mayor or city councilor or governor or president of the United States or U.S. senator or member of Congress, in almost every single other election contest that I can think of, it is natural, normal, healthy, and rational for the candidates and everyone else to talk about outcomes. A candidate for any of those offices will naturally say, as they should, vote for me, and this is the outcome that I will strive for or get for you. That is a natural and normal thing. Not so for a judicial election contest, because judges are supposed to not care about the outcome. Rather, they're supposed to officiate and make sure that the outcome is as a result of other natural processes, whether it's a jury or some other function, and they're not to care about the outcome. So that's the critical difference here, and that's why the competitive election climate for judges is so potentially horribly damaging, and you need not look very far to see what the collateral damage is. In our neighboring state of Wisconsin, cycle after cycle after cycle, with a couple of really notable and notorious examples in recent years, you've seen big buck, ideologically driven, outcome-based contests for the judiciary, usually pitting the usual suspects. Labor on one side, business interests on another side, or around sort of divisive social issues. And you see millions and millions of dollars poured into judicial contests where the candidates themselves are forced to and actively participate in a campaign that is about outcomes. Vote for this judge and you will get this outcome. And that is an unhealthy thing for our judiciary or any. And it's not just Wisconsin, that's just the closest example. Ohio, Tennessee, California, Alabama, Texas, where people either run with party designations or even when they don't, are engaged once again in these big buck, ideologically driven, outcome-based judicial contests. So that's really the problem here. And unless we do something about it in Minnesota, I fear, and I think many who you'll hear from today fear, that we're headed for the same kind of result, which is those big buck, ideologically driven, outcome-based judicial elections, and we don't want that. So to describe the bill here, I have with me Sarah Walker, who's been instrumental in this process, and she can introduce herself and walk you through the high points of the bill. But I will say, Madam Chair, that I understand that our testimony today and the comments today from members and others, as I understand that we've agreed to here, will really be focused on the election as part of this bill, not on merit selection, not on the evaluation piece. That's for other committees in this process to decide. This will go to judiciary, it'll go to civil law. We're just really going to focus our remarks. I will, and I hope, Madam Chair, you'll enforce that, that is really what we're here to talk about, not the other material.
Thank you for that clarification, Representative Simon. Ms. Walker, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members and Representative Simon, for taking this time this afternoon to consider the critical reforms put forth in House File 1083, also known as the Impartial Justice Act. While the issue of how we select and retain judges in Minnesota may not always be a topic that consistently captures headlines like other issues that come before this body, a fair and impartial judiciary that is accountable to the citizens to whom it presides over is nonetheless a subject of grave importance to the future of our state. I understand that the House Elections Committee's focus today will be on the heart of our proposal, retention elections. However, I would like to take a very brief moment to explain what the Impartial Justice Act does and what problems it addresses. This is critical to understanding the piece about retention elections. The first problem is that voters today have little or no information about how judges have performed on the bench. And in fact, you don't have to take my word for it. I'm sure that many of you have frequently been called by your constituents wondering who was on the ballot. The second problem is that even if a voter did not know who the judge was and had an understanding of how they performed on the bench, and for whatever reason felt that this judge should no longer hold this position, 90% of judges in Minnesota actually run unopposed. So in reality, this voter would only have a 1 in 10 chance to do anything but vote yes for the judge. The third problem we're addressing is that there is a trend that Representative Simon mentioned that's sweeping our nation almost like an epidemic, a vast amount of special interest money and campaign contributions going directly into judicial races, and in many cases mushrooming state Supreme Court races into elections the size of many U.S. Senate races and gubernatorial contests. It is chiefly these three challenges that the comprehensive and common sense reforms in the Impartial Justice Act seek to remedy. First, this legislation contemplates the creation of a judicial performance evaluation commission that will review and make public information about the judge's performance while on the bench. The Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission will consist equally of representatives from all three branches of state government, with the majority of its members being non-attorneys. A transparent evaluation process will empower the voters with information about the performance of their judges to use when deciding whether a judge should retain their position on the bench. Second, the Impartial Justice Act will restore the ability of voters to hold judges accountable, not just 10% of the time, which is currently the case, but rather 100% of the time, via retention elections, a simple yes or no vote on whether every judge should keep his or her position. By doing this, Minnesota voters will once again have a meaningful vote in judicial races every single time they step into the ballot box. Because a system that is only functioning 10% of the time is not really a system at all. And finally, the Impartial Justice Act will ensure quality and partiality through mandatory merit selection at all levels of the judiciary. Nearly all Minnesota District Court judges have reached the bench through an appointment process based on merit. And as a result, our judiciary is recognized as one of the best in the nation. Expanding merit for the entire judiciary and making it mandatory guarantees that no special interest can buy a seat on the bench. In other words, merit should be mandatory in Minnesota, and justice is not for sale in our state. These three elements taken together empower Minnesota voters. Citizens will now have information regarding a judge's performance, the opportunity to act on information, and the assurance that no special interest or individual or political party can buy a seat on our state's judiciary. And I will close my remarks humbly today with this thought. I'm asking you not to forget the largest stakeholder in our judicial process, the end user. I'm here as an end user of that judicial system. I'm not an attorney, and my role as president of the Coalition for Impartial Justice is as a volunteer. But I am here representing the largest stakeholder group. And I'm here because the fair and impartial courts protect the rights of every American. And I'm here because, like most Minnesotans, I'm not satisfied with only being able to hold judges accountable 10% of the time, because I find it unacceptable to turn over the ballot and not have information about judicial performance, and because I want to make sure that the voice of the end user, the Minnesota citizen, isn't drowned out by powerful and well-resourced special interests. The Impartial Justice Act will empower the end user of the justice system with information and the ability to make a decision 100% of the time. We believe that these reforms are critical in Minnesota, and at the end of the day, we should leave this decision up to the voters. And we would like for you to consider placing this robustly bipartisan proposal on the November 2014 ballot. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, I noticed that we have a quorum here, so a couple housekeeping matters. I'll move that House File 1083 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary Policy and Finance. And then I have an oral amendment, which is basically a housekeeping matter. It's to delete Section 14 of the bill, starting on line 6.24. This was a inadvertent error to leave this in. This was from a prior version of this bill. And so this was not meant to be in this version. This has to do with a performance evaluation fee that would be charged on people, on attorneys right now, in terms of their annual licensure fee. So it's just removing that provision. So it asks for your support for the amendment.
Very good. Representative Simon moves that Section 14 of House File 1083 be removed. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Are we ready to continue with testifiers? And I would like, committee, because there are so many people who want to be heard on this, perhaps we can hold questions until the end. Does everyone agree with that?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. The next testifier on the list is the Honorable Tad Jude.
Madam Chair, while Judge Jude is coming down, I understand that you're imposing a time limit on comments, on testimony.
Thank you. Representative Simon, yes, it would be helpful if testifiers could keep their comments to 2.5 minutes or less, and again, focus to the elections portion of the bill would be most helpful. So, thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and my name is Tad Jude. I represent the 10th Judicial District, takes in 8 counties that go along the northern suburban area. And basically, you've got a question here that I can't see how anybody could oppose. You know, shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to strengthen the impartiality of the judiciary by providing that all judges be appointed by the governor from a list of candidates nominated by a merit selection commission in a manner provided by law, with their continuation in office determined at a retention election after a public nonpartisan evaluation of their performance by an independent performance evaluation commission? Who could be opposed to that? I am. And there are a number of reasons I'm opposed to it. I mean, we talked about the end users. I think one of the toughest jobs you have in court is trying to keep an even playing field in the courtroom, keeping an open mind through all the testimony till everything comes in. We have a situation where established parties have many advantages. They usually have the law on their side. They usually have the rules of court on their side. They usually have the best litigators money can buy. You have all the establishment involved in, you know, the executive branch. You have the establishment involved in the legislative branch. We try to make things fair as possible in the judicial branch. And I don't think the establishment needs this tool. They don't need to have absolute control over who gets on the bench. And what you're doing is disenfranchising people who oftentimes need to be enfranchised, the people who are the victims, the handicapped, the impoverished, the weak, the excluded, the people who you have a duty to represent who aren't here today. And a sanitized retention election system isn't an answer. In fact, I don't really know what the problem is in Minnesota. I mean, we aren't Wisconsin. And in fact, in Iowa, they have retention elections. We had millions of dollars in a very negative campaign against incumbent judges. I don't know what the substantial and compelling problem is we're trying to address. And Minnesotans, I think, don't have an appetite for just, you know, gratuitous constitutional amendments. You know, constitutional amendments that have no problem that they're up to solve. Is that my 2.5 minutes?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, with that, I think it's a vote of how you see the court system. If you think the establishment isn't well represented in our court system, vote for this. If you think the people who aren't represented that well in our court system, you know, need to have a fair playing field, I think you'd vote against this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have the Honorable Eric Magnuson. Welcome to the committee, and just a reminder that we're working on a tight timeline. I know you understand that.
I'm used to lights going off when I speak, usually to tell me to stop. Madam Chair, members of the committee, as you know, I served as Chief Justice of the state of Minnesota. I was the top legal officer. I supervised the judicial system. But 5 years before that, I served as the chairman of the Commission on Judicial Selection and had a hand in selecting dozens, if not hundreds, of judges to the bench. I've seen the system inside and out. You need to change the system now in order to stop the pernicious influence of politics on what is a very good system. It is eroding the public trust and confidence in our system. Since Republican Party versus White and Citizens United, judicial campaigns are freed to be as political as your campaigns and to have unlimited funding. Now, you run on platforms, and that's appropriate. You said, if I'm elected, I'll accomplish this for you. A judge doesn't run on a platform, and while I have great respect for Judge Jude, what he basically said to you is, let's put some people in with a bias one way, the way he thinks it should be, because that will level the playing field. It's absolutely the wrong way to choose judges. You choose judges because they will follow the law, they will recognize the limits of their power, and they will treat everyone fairly. Minnesota has a long tradition of open judicial elections, and I have to admit, the system has not been subject to the abuse that many other states have seen. But let me tell you the effect of politics. I worked hard this summer on a campaign, or last fall, on a campaign for Judge Catherine Messerick in the 1st Judicial District. She's one of the best judges there. She's handling the St. Paul Crime Labs case. She had an impeccable record, and someone chose to run against her. She had to spend time and money mounting a campaign to respond to someone who not only was underqualified for the job, but did nothing to campaign. But she had to run against him, and she had to try to educate the public on her exceptional record. And she was largely unsuccessful in that. I think that, when voters went to the polls, they had no way of distinguishing between those two candidates. The judicial retention election proposal will have a meaningful evaluation of judges, and it will keep politics out of it. The reason it keeps politics out is because while an interested party can run against a judge, can mount a campaign against, they can't handpick their selector. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Justice Magnuson. Next, we have Sandra Garzini. And I might have said that completely wrong. And after that, it will be Sherry Knuth. And so, testifiers, if you want to get close to the desk so that we can move efficiently. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, good afternoon. Oh.
It's the page. You can sit. Somebody will come and get them, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
My name is Sandra Grazzini. I'm coming to testify today to let you know very briefly how the court in Dakota County has handled my case and why I stand in favor of judicial accountability and against retention elections. My information is also available to you in the last two pages of your handout. As a result of the rulings of Judge David L. Knutson, I have been left homeless, deprived of any contact with my children, and stripped of all marital assets, including our marital company we owned, numerous homes, vehicles, bank accounts, credit cards, and more. I was ordered to vacate the family home within 24 hours' notice with only my clothing and a suitcase. I have previously acquired government assistance for health insurance and food support, although my ex-husband has an income in excess of $200,000 per month. My five children were placed in foster care with relatives, despite the fact that I have no record of harming them in any way. I was their primary caregiver. My four younger children want to live with me, but I'm not permitted to have contact with them, not even school information. Due to the claim by the court of parental alienation, my children have been subjected to reprogramming so that they will like their abusive father. My independent psychiatric evaluations have been normal, as well as court-ordered alcohol and substance abuse testing has come back proven clean also. As a flight attendant for 27 years, I am also routinely tested for alcohol, substance abuse, and psych exams, and have also been found clean. Judge Knutson refuses other opinions in the court. By spring of 2012, I was forced to use all of life insurance inheritance from my deceased father to pay for court-ordered attorney's fees, payments to my ex, and debt payments. I now have to represent myself. Judge Knutson is not followed.
I just wanted to remind you we're on a tight timeline, okay, so be sure you speak to the bill, and we're a little under just under a minute, so thank you.
I feel there's no option ordered to me at this point since every request of my ex is granted, as I've been charged for things Knutson solely based off my ex false allegations. Goes on to when Judge Knutson's orders, when my ex had his driver's license taken and passport, he overruled state and federal law by returning these to my ex-husband. This is clearly out of Judge Knutson's jurisdiction, yet he is scheduled a hearing on the matter. Judicial elections so that judges who routinely rule outside the law will be stopped from ruining the lives of children and their parents. Thanks for the opportunity to share my situation. It is unfortunately not unique. Please decide to promote justice in the courts by keeping judges accountable to the people through contested judicial elections. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for being so brief. Next, we have Sherry Knuth, and after that, it will be Andrea Rao. Again, if you could be prepared to testify. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sherry Knuth, and I am Policy and Outreach Manager for League of Women Voters, Minnesota. League of Women Voters supports integrity in all three branches of government, including the judicial branch. In 2007, League of Women Voters Minnesota convened a study committee to address the issue of judicial selection in our state in light of the court decisions that have been discussed. Our concern was that the changes made by these court decisions threaten the quality and independence of our state's judiciary. Our legal system is based on the rule of law. That means that decisions should not be based on the personal views of judges, inappropriate public pressure, or moneyed or partisan interests. At the same time, judges must be accountable to the law and Constitution and to standards of diligence and competence. Judges should also afford fair treatment to all participants. How should these considerations be balanced in choosing judges in our state? Based on our study committee's work, League of Women Voters adopted a position supporting merit selection, end of terms evaluations of judges, and retention elections. This model is balanced. It guarantees qualified judges from the start while preserving the public's right to vote. It gives voters the final say on whether judges should be retained on the bench. It also provides voters with relevant, unbiased information before they vote. League of Women Voters has been holding public forums on this issue in Minnesota communities and has more forums scheduled. We have found that voters are concerned about maintaining the integrity of our court system, particularly after learning about what has happened in other parts of the country. Our democracy requires trust and confidence. League of Women Voters believes that the merit selection retention system is the fairest of the options available and best promotes public confidence in the courts. We urge you to vote in favor of HF 1083. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Andrea Rao. And after Ms. Rao, Kate Johansson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Andrea Rao, and I represent Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. MCCL began in 1968 as a small group of individuals who shared a common interest and a common goal. Today, with a membership of more than 70,000 families, MCCL is a powerful player in Minnesota politics. However, We continue to view the organization very much as those individuals who gathered together in 1968 did, as a group of concerned citizens who have come together to speak with one voice. At MCCL, we know that the few individuals at our state office is not what makes a difference, but it is the tens of thousands of like-minded individuals acting in concert who make a difference. The ability of these individuals to have a voice in the various branches of government, local, state, and federal, executive, legislative, and judicial, is a primary principle of our government. MCCL believes strongly in this principle, and it is the primary reason that we oppose the proposal to institute judicial retention elections in Minnesota. The reasons for our opposition include: we oppose the premise that citizens aren't qualified to vote for judges. We believe Minnesota citizens ought to have the right to vote for particular judicial candidates, not just against them. We don't believe that judicial retention elections make for less political judicial elections. And we believe that judicial retention elections move the accountability of the judicial branch from the electorate to a small, unelected, unaccountable commission of political appointees. For these reasons, we urge the committee to reject the legislation before you today. Thank you for considering our concerns.
Thank you for your testimony. Kate Johansson. And after that, we'll hear from Judge Teresa Warner. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kate Johansson. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and its 2,400 employers, 80% of which are small businesses. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 1083 and thank Representative Simon for his carrying this important legislation. The Chamber supports efforts to amend the state's constitution to implement judicial retention election systems per the Citizens Commission for the Preservation of an Impartial Judiciary, colloquially known as the CUI Commission. The reason that we support House File 1083 is simple. It's good public policy that achieves the objectives of that commission and its report. There are three things that I'd like to touch on today as reasons related to elections for why the Chamber supports this bill. The first is money. Retention elections result in fewer big money judicial campaigns, and that's good because the more money there is in elections, the more politics there is in elections. And the more politics you have in elections, the more pressure there is on judges to campaign as a candidate based on a preconceived outcome instead of qualifications and credentials. Second, we think that this legislation is important in relationship to its role, or to the judiciary's role, pardon me. As noted earlier, judges should be arbiters, not advocates. By avoiding increased money in politics and judicial elections, you decrease the amount of pressure on judges to change their role in our current governance system. The result is not only the preservation of Minnesota's great judiciary currently, but also the preservation of the public's perception of that impartiality. The last issue that leads to the Chamber's support is timing. As Representative Simon and other testifiers have noted, this is a vulnerable time for judicial elections. Due to recent case law, there is vulnerability to increased political activity in judicial elections, and that's a concerning trend. The United States Chamber of Commerce Institute for Legal Reform provides a biennial study on this topic, and there's a strong correlation between states that have more partisan judicial elections and a lack of impartiality in those states. More importantly, again, there is a much lower level of faith amongst the public in their judicial systems when partisan elections are part of the judiciary system in a state. And for those reasons, the Chamber would ask you to pass House File 1083. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Judge Teresa Warner. Welcome to the committee, Judge Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to appear today to discuss the Minnesota District Judges Association position on judicial elections. Again, my name is Tracy Warner. I'm the Chief Judge of the 2nd Judicial District, which is Ramsey County. I'm also the co-chair of the District Judges Association Elections Committee. I've been a district judge for over 15 years here in St. Paul. The Minnesota District Association's Minnesota District Judges Association's dues-paying members and voting members include virtually all active district court judges in the state of Minnesota, plus some of our Court of Appeals judges and Supreme Court justices. The Minnesota District Judges Association has had a very active and thoughtful group of committee members reviewing election proposals and discussing election changes in Minnesota and across the country for over two decades. We understand the importance and significance of ensuring that our judicial branch is second to none and that election issues can have an impact on decisions to apply or run for the bench as well as to stay on the bench. Up until several years ago, our association had a position against retention elections. After significant study and dialogue, I report to you that we are open to supporting retention elections if some key elements are included in the proposed legislation. I'm pleased to say that almost all are or were contained in the bill before you. To that end, I do want to thank Representative Simon for his passion for this issue, for his hard work on this complex litigation, and for his continued openness to working with the state judiciary on this bill. Specifically, the key elements important to the judicial branch that have been addressed in the bill include the provision for a constitutionally created performance evaluation commission, which is an independent body not subject to the control of any branch of government. Two, a uniform election system and mandatory merit selection for all judges at all court levels. Three, a budget for the Performance Evaluation Commission, which is based on a source of sufficient, secure, and dedicated funding. We feel very strongly that the evaluations done by this commission must be fair and accurate and therefore must be insulated from political and budgetary pressures. Although this is not a finance committee, I recognize that, and an updated fiscal note has not yet been determined, we feel confident that all parties recognize the need to adequately fund this commission from a secure source. Now, these were my comments before the oral amendment was made. We like Section 14 that was in the bill, and we hope it finds its way back into the bill at some point. In the eyes of the parties who appear before us, judges make controversial decisions every day. The very nature of our jobs is that we disappoint or anger many people. Any one of them can launch a viral campaign against our retention with postings on Facebook, campaigns of tweets, or other sources. Under current
law, Judge Warner, we're going over time, so I need to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please wrap up. We've got a number of people who still need to be heard.
So all right, and I apologize for that.
That's all right.
What I'd like to conclude saying is that we appreciate the opportunity to share our thoughts and experiences in the committee today. We remain committed to working on a solution that protects the impartiality of judges while promoting accountability of judges to the public and is fair to all concerned. The bill in its current version prior to the oral amendment made great strides to doing that. That's all I have. Thank you for allowing me to go over just a little bit. Appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.
The next testifier, it looks like we've got some folks representing the same group, so perhaps you could come down together. Bonnie Roy, Michael Radin, and I'm not sure if Dale Nathan is part of this group, but it might be efficient for you guys to testify together, or if you want to have one person testify on your behalf. Welcome to the committee. You may proceed. Whoever would like to go first, just state your name.
Hi, my name is Bonnie Roy, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. In regards to some of the issues looking at today, I am against judicial retention elections. This will furthermore remove the voters from judge selection and evaluation. The people need to know what judges are doing. They should not be above the law and above evaluation. Legislatures should be chosen to evaluate the judges so that there is an honest appraisal of their performance. And there is a lot of controversial once you step into family court, but when you are basically, in a sense, homeless, forced to be on medical assistance and food support, there has to be a dividing line. The Judicial Standard Board, as an example, I have a stack of complaints that basically got sent back to me stating that even if it's a legal or illegal mistake, there's no reprimands that they have the power to enforce. I also received a letter from the First Judicial District Judge Edward Lynch, and also in regards to Judge David L. Knutson, he also resides on the Judicial Standards Board. And often when these complaints are going directly to a judge, we often wonder, especially with the stack of papers and complaints I have here, why they're getting overridden. The Judicial Standard Board has no power to remove a judge from a case. Generally speaking, if a litigant believes a judge is acting properly, the relief needed is to have the judge removed. Again, this goes back in a circle, and we aren't getting anywhere, and we're asking that the legislator seriously take a good look at this because our cases are extreme. Let's say that a judge has a violation, and we continually go back to the Judicial Standards Board. Again, there's no recommendation for that. We are encouraging that generally known that the Minnesota Constitution expressively provides an oversight of the judiciary by the legislator. Minnesota Constitute states, Article 6, Section 9, the legislature may also provide for the removal or other discipline of any judge who is disabled, incompetent, or guilty of a conduct prejudicial in the administration of injustice. We need a legislative board that provides oversight of the judiciary, just like the legislative auditor provides oversight of the executive branch. We ask that you create such a board where Minnesotans are assured that their submitted complaints will be thoroughly addressed and the judges will be held accountable for their actions. One other quick comment that I would also like to make. According to the Supreme Court regulation, it states that no judge can accept a $150 gratuity that they can, And according to this, the Board of Judicial Standards, it states that under improper influence that they cannot give or receive any gifts, bribes, or loans. Again, there's controversial issues.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Nathan, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Dale Nathan. I'm a retired attorney who practiced over 30 years, and so I have personally seen many, many examples of judges not following the statutes, disregarding our Constitution, and not granting due process. The heart of the bill that we are talking about is Section 15. That's the section that creates the 24-member selection and evaluation panel. This 24-member committee is chosen 8 by the Supreme Court, 8 by the governor, and 8 by the legislature.
Mr. Nathan, I would like us to stay on task, and this actual committee is charged with the elections portion of it. I believe it's going off to another committee, judiciary, where we're going to be, where that committee is going to deal with the board appointment and commission.
Okay.
You'd like to make comments to the elections portion of the bill, that would be helpful to this committee.
I am addressing the election portion, okay. Madam Chair.
Thank you.
This committee of 24, which is politically pure a political committee, will select all of the judges in Minnesota. It will evaluate and grade all of the judges in Minnesota. The 24 members who would do this selection are charged with making sure that judges make the right decisions, the right decision in the eyes of the lawyers who appear before them and the special interests behind them. Madam Chair, 78 years ago, it's a mere tick of time in our history, we watched a small group seize power in Germany, supposedly a civilized country. We watched as a madman and a small group of his cronies used their power to take thousands of children from their homes and put them in state-run schools where they were desensitized and programmed to be soldiers and murderers. Millions of people died. Property damage was in the hundreds of millions. We watched a small group control.
Mr. Nathan, we do have to wrap up testimony, so
I will do that in just
conclude.
About less
Thank
than
you.
A minute.
Well, we've just we've got less than 30 seconds. So
all right, we watched the atrocities of the Soviet Union during the Cold War. We watched a group seize control of 1 billion people in China, all because a small group seized and abused their power. Now this small group of judges and lawyers are seeking to grab more power, to control the selection of all our judges, to evaluate and rate them, and deny us competitive election and any participation in the selection of judges. We know that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. We should defeat this bill and preserve our rights to vote for judges in competitive elections. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony, and thank you for being brief. I know that's difficult. Next, we have Tom Pritchard, and on deck, I have Tim Kinsley. So if you guys want to be prepared to testify. Thank you.
Madam
Welcome.
Chair, I have a couple handouts.
The page can get those handouts.
Okay. Madam Chair, my name is Tom Pritchard. I'm here to speak in opposition to this bill. I understand the concerns about contested elections and loss of impartial judiciary, but I'm concerned and believe an even greater threat to society and the judiciary's credibility is abuse of power by judges who have no accountability to the public. This is a bigger danger than any danger posed by contested elections. The judiciary, which abuses its authority and is not accountable to the public, is the reason I believe the drafters of the Minnesota Constitution included judicial elections in the Minnesota Constitution. They were responding to one of the most egregious instances of judicial activism, the 1857 Dred Scott decision, which, among other things, tied the hands of Congress regarding prohibiting slavery in the territories. There are a couple of significant changes this bill proposes which insulates the judiciary from public accountability. It shifts power to an unelected body, the Merit Selection Commission, in the selection of judges. It disenfranchises the people because they will no longer have the ability to elect and unelect judges. It also shifts and centralizes the control of information on judges in the Supreme Court. And finally, on the issue of judicial elections, a number of objections are often raised. Justice is for sale. It leads to a loss of legitimacy. Their elected judges are less qualified. Well, the handout I have was a report produced by the Federalist Society, which examines each of these charges. The writer answers each of them and concludes that they just aren't substantiated by the evidence. In conclusion, whatever negatives there are in contested elections, it is outweighed by efforts to further insulate the judiciary in Minnesota from public scrutiny and accountability to the people of Minnesota, which comes with contested judicial elections. I believe Minnesota's current system of judges appointed by the governor and then forced to face the voters every 6 years works well for Minnesotans. This is a classic case of, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Tim Kinsley. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Legislators, my name is Tim Kinsley. I'm the president of Our Kids of Minnesota, which is a group that supports good parents being in the lives of their children. We are not a father's rights group, which some judges think we are. And sometimes you find out how a judge thinks about you after they're not on the bench. You know, so they get this misrepresentation. We want good parents involved in the lives of their kids. But I'm not here speaking on behalf of Our Kids of Minnesota. I've been into a lot of courtrooms. I've seen judges' behaviors. I know what they do. So I just have experience, a lot of experience with this. First of all, I will never, ever give up my right to vote. I mean, to think that you're asking for everybody to give up their right to vote is unbelievable. And it's coming from the judiciary. Unbelievable. This impartial group, and it's amazing to me to see all the judges down here giving their opinion on this. I mean, for to say it's impartial is baffling to me because they're human. Nobody's impartial. And because they swear an oath to uphold the Constitution, we have a standard by which to measure them. But you're taking the biggest part of accountability, and actually one of the only pieces of accountability we have left since the legislature, whose job is to hold judges accountable, refuses to do it. And and now you're going to take away our ability and our right to vote. And the hyperbole that came out with the photo voter ID bill that some people might not get the right to vote, and then this year we come in and we're taking it away from everybody. Yes, it's about judges, but nobody gets the right to vote. The smaller the decision-making part of an organization, the more political it is. I, as a citizen, before you today, my percentage of my vote
need to wrap it up.
Okay, is very small. But if I'm on that 24 committee, which I may have to buy my spot to get appointed to that, they at the least they have a 5% vote. And if I'm on the winning side, I have approximately a 10% vote. I have a lot more power. So, you know, this is not impartial. This is not fair. This is not about justice.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Greg Wurzel. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Greg Wurzel. I'm a lawyer. I've practiced law for about 30 years. I was the lead plaintiff in the White case, which was talked about a little bit earlier. I know quite a bit about judicial elections, and I'm asking the page to hand out a piece here where I've set out several of the serious problems with judicial retention elections, including the fact that they will not create a judicial impartial judiciary, that the judicial elections will in fact result in a less qualified judiciary, and they will not solve the problem of money and the influence of money in elections. But today I want to talk about an even more serious problem. We've all heard about the 14th Amendment. It guarantees everyone the right to due process and equal protection. That's Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. Section 2 deals with the apportionment of representatives in the U.S. House of Representatives, and it contains a specific provision that says that when the right to vote in any election for various offices in a state, including judicial officers, is in any way abridged or denied the citizens of the state, there's a repercussion, and that is that the state loses their representation in the U.S. House of Representatives. And I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that if you adopt this bill, you will be abridging the rights of the citizens to vote for judicial officers, you will be violating the 14th Amendment, and you will be risking that this state could lose its representation in the U.S. House of Representatives. Other states, there are attorneys right now preparing this kind of litigation. I know what's going on in the state of Missouri. If you pass this, it's coming here too. This is a real serious problem. I brought it up at the last legislative session, and to the best of my knowledge, no research has been done by your staff on this legal issue. This is an incredibly important issue. The state does not want to lose its representation in the House of Representatives. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. That's it for all the scheduled testifiers. Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, I know we have to get on to another bill. This bill has other committee stops, and we are focused narrowly on the question of elections. I just have one major comment to make in response to some of the testifiers, all of them well-meaning, who testified against a bill that I don't recognize because it's not the one I wrote and that's before you. Let me just be clear, if I wasn't at the beginning, 90% of judges now face no opposition. If you really want to take out a judge who you think has wronged you or someone else, this is the ticket, because now, with a retention election, every judge, every time in every election, could lose his or her job. Right now, they're home free as of the end of the filing deadline if, as happens 90% of the time, no one files to challenge them. So if you have a personal grievance, or even if you don't, you think a judge is otherwise unqualified, or is wrong for the bench, or has made a mistake, or for whatever reason shouldn't be on there, this should be a proposal you like, because it means 100% of the time, not 10% of the time. 100% of the time in a retention election, if you and your fellow citizens, 50% plus one of you, vote no to retain that judge will lose, and they can pack their bags in their chambers and leave. With the current system, only 10% of them are ever challenged. And I will say that the judge that was mentioned here in the one particular case, the only person whose name was mentioned, did not have a challenger in the last election. So there was no mechanism by which the testifier or anyone else could take that judge out. So I just think it's important to realize here, and reasonable people can be for or against this bill, but I hope it's characterized correctly. Retention elections don't mean you're giving up the right to vote. If anything, I would think that it increases public accountability, because each and every time the judge could lose, not just 10% of the time. With that, Madam Chair, I would assume we're ready for a vote, but it's up to you.
Thank you, Representative Simon. Are any members of the committee who have questions for the author or any of the testifiers? Seeing none, do any members of the public wish to be heard? We've heard pretty thorough testimony today.
Can I follow up on that? What he just said?
I believe your time has been given, so okay. Everybody had their chance to testify. Well, with that, Representative Simon renews his motion that House File, thank you, that House File 1083 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary Finance and Policy. I don't know why that was such a mouthful. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
The motion passes.
Okay, members, we'll now move to the second and final bill of the day, and that's House File 334, Representative Bernardi. To your bill, Representative Bernardi.
Okay,
thank you. Want to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the chair and recommend that House File 334 to pass and be referred to State Government Finance and Veterans Affairs.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Bernardi. To your bill.
I have a author's. Would you like me to get in the shape that I'd like?
Please.
I'd like it in. Okay. I'd like to move Amendment A1 to get it in the shape that we'd like to discuss today.
Okay. Representative Bernardi moves the A1 amendment. Why don't you describe the A1 amendment?
I'm going to defer that to Ms. Frazier next to me here.
Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, sorry, and members. Beth Frazier from the Office of the Secretary of State. The amendment does a few things. One is that it clarifies that cities that have the technological capacity can choose to use early voting in their standalone elections if they want. The bill is introduced only applied to federal, state, and county elections. It also clarifies that for early voting, jurisdictions administering it must be open on two Saturdays until 5 p.m., and they must be open on 8 p.m. on a weeknight during the early voting period. It limits early voting to county and city buildings. So this does not allow for vote centers. There's not going to be voting at the Mall of America or someplace else. It will only be in government buildings. And it provides a clarification for notice to voters of the early voting period if the jurisdiction does not have a website.
Okay. Any questions from members as to the A1 amendment? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment, just to get it in the shape that the author wants, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The bill is now in the shape that the author would like. To the bill as amended, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to present this bill today and let you know that I really think it's a voter integrity and confidence and access bill, as well as really sound fiscal policy and good steward of our resources. One of the things about early voting is some Minnesotans think it's already happening, but yet on the other side, I find a lot of people don't really understand exactly what early voting means. And so I just wanted to walk you through briefly with kind of the framework around this, who started it, and how it's been adopted in other states, and then what it means here for Minnesota. Minnesota was not the first state. We're slow at coming to this. Texas was actually the first state to pass this. We now have 32 states that have early voting in them.
One of the things, Minnesota actually is an island. We have North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin around us who also have early voting. One of the things that's very helpful with this early voting is it helps bring integrity to our system and the fact that our voters are having to comply with having to have an excuse to why to do an absentee voting early. And frankly, it'd be better for Minnesotans just to be able to say they'd like to early vote. And this is one tool in which that to allow them to early vote. I have some examples that I might share in just a moment and how Minnesotans like already think we're doing early voting, but I'll share that in a moment. Then also, it also gives a peace of mind. When you go, right now in Minnesota, you can go into early vote. It'd be 45 days before the election and with an absentee ballot. Sometimes you have to go through the whole process of filling out the form and doing all those sorts of things. And when you're in person, it's a little bit easier because it helps you be able to do it accurately. But if you're sending it in from into the mailbox, sometimes people don't put their P.O. box. It gets rejected. Sometimes they don't sign it. Sometimes they don't have a witness sign it. So it gives a peace of mind to be able to go in and vote early. And then it's also cost effective. If we have people coming in to vote early and using the system we already have in place with our tabulators and our voting system, they don't have to go through all the paperwork, and administrators of the elections don't have to process it like an absentee ballot, which has been estimated to cost twice as much than actually using the voting machines. Then also it's just good fiscal policy. It's more efficient, it's less bureaucratic, it streamlines the process, and we use it a system that's already existing, so we're not creating a new system. Give you just a few details, and Ms. Frazier will provide more details, but early voting means simply that people get to vote in person before election day, and in our bill that we're proposing is 15 days before the election. They'd have the opportunity to come to 8 to 4:30 on one day a week, 8 to 8, to make it accessible for those who can't get there between 8 and 4:30, and then on Saturday, for two Saturdays, from 8 to 5. So that tells you a little bit about how we're going about this in Minnesota. And I wanted to share a couple handouts with you that shows the map of the 32 states that we have in our nation that already do early voting. So I'll have a page pass that out. And then I also, this is not to be partisan. I thought about crossing out names on it, but there's pictures on it, so it's pretty obvious. But this could be for either party. It could be Democrat or Republican. I didn't find another one that I could get in possession. But people in elections are already receiving literature that says, vote early today. On the other side, it's vote early, voting early, vote early. And there's nothing in there that even talks about, this is referring to absentee voting, but it doesn't even talk about having to have an excuse. The point on this is that people are already under the impression that there is early voting. So I just wanted to share that with you, that I think this puts integrity in the system that really give people an opportunity to vote early without having to lie or have an excuse to vote early. And frankly, Ireland imposed this because the weather, they didn't know if the weather would be good on that day. And sometimes people aren't feeling well, or someone in their family is not feeling well, and it's just giving people the opportunity and the access to vote 15 days before in person in a cost-efficient way just makes sense for Minnesota. It seems like common sense to me, and we have a lot of testifiers today, so I'd like to have Ms. Frazier point out some other parts of the bill to get you more familiar with it and then move to our testifiers.
Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make some general comments and then walk through the policy in the bill, if possible. We would urge support for this bill to bring early voting to Minnesota because it will help modernize our system. It'll bring it into line with the majority of other states, including, as Representative Rinardi pointed out, all of our neighboring states. It gives voters convenience and choice and peace of mind they're looking for. It allows them to vote once they've made up their mind at a time convenient to them and give them assurance that their vote will be counted. Doing both early voting and no-excuse absentee voting in conjunction with one another makes sense. That's what 25 other states do. Only one has no excuse absentee voting without early voting. That's New Jersey. No excuse absentee voting will increase participation, and adding early voting is an efficient and fiscally responsible measure to hold down the cost for in-person voters by avoiding the need for them to fill out two forms, use two envelopes, and have teams of two election judges to process the paperwork, send replacement ballots in cases where they made errors, open the envelopes, and feed the ballots into the machines. If voters are using in-person absentee voting, they're not sure that their ballot will be accepted. You'll hear arguments against it, but these arguments don't hold water. You'll hear people concerned about the Wellstone situation, the death of a candidate late in the election cycle. But that's being taken care of by the bill that Representative Sanders is offering related to partisan vacancies and nomination. You'll hear that voters will want to change their mind for other reasons, but that's really not the case. In Minneapolis in 2012, out of 15,000 absentee voters, one changed their mind. We've talked to other states, and 23 out of 25 other states that we were able to contact don't allow absentee voters to retract their ballot once it's been submitted. Some of those states don't allow voters to get a new ballot even if they haven't submitted their ballot. Once they've been sent an absentee ballot, that's their ballot and they're done. You'll hear that there's problems with lack of citizen oversight. But that doesn't need to be true. This is a polling place. And if political parties want to send challengers to the early voting sites, they could do that. And we're already doing in-person absentee balloting in those locations. Why isn't that an issue under the current system? Early voting will only be done in government buildings, which should serve as even more of a deterrent if anyone is worried about people who aren't eligible wanting to vote and use this system. Some will say, well, absentee voting is more secure. But absentee votes under our current system are not verified before ballots are counted. They never have been. The only difference between in-person absentee voting and early voting is that it takes more processing, more paperwork, and a certain percentage of the ballots. In the last election, it was 2.2% of the ballots will be rejected because voters make mistakes. So in 2012, over 5,600 voters had their initial absentee ballot rejected. I want to remind you that early voting is in-person voting, which, to quote Dan McGrath from Minnesota Majority, is the gold standard when it comes to election integrity. So in the bill, here's how the system would work. 46 days ahead of the election, absentee voting would start, both by mail, which would continue through Election Day, and in person. Absentee ballot boards would meet to accept and reject ballots and send replacements to voters whose ballots are rejected because of a mistake on their envelope. 16 days before the election, all absentee ballots would be considered final because early voting is about to begin. That's the only way to ensure that a voter doesn't have two ballots counted, is to have absentee ballots final at that time. 15 days before the election, early voting would begin, and in-person absentee voting would not be offered. Voters who come into City Hall or the county courthouse would be offered the opportunity to vote early. It's in-person voting in the auditor's or clerk's office. Voters would come in just like they do in the polling place and state their name and address and be given a ballot. It's immediately marked in the statewide voter registration system to ensure that they could not then go to another location and vote again. And after the voter had filled out the ballot, it would be put in the ballot counter. There are changes in the bill for timing related to testing voting equipment to make this possible. The voter, once they put their ballot in the ballot counter, knows the vote is accepted, and that not only is there no risk of it being rejected by an absentee ballot board for a mistake in the paperwork, but also that they didn't make a mistake in the ballot by voting for too many candidates or crossing over in a partisan primary. It requires that early voting locations be open on two Saturdays and one weeknight. Early voting continues until 5 p.m. on the Saturday before the election. This gives time to ensure that the rosters are marked, because obviously if somebody has voted early, we want to ensure that they are not allowed to vote in person in the polling place. Of course, there are some voters who might realize on Sunday that they need to, that they will not be able to go to the polling place and will need to vote on Monday. If, for example, they get an email from their boss, hey, you're going on a business trip Monday night, get packed. So absentee voting would continue to be offered on the day before the election from 8 until noon. There was some debate about this, and this was the agreement that discussions with local election officials and voting advocates came to offer absentee voting on that day before the election, but end it earlier than we currently do. Absentee voting at this point is necessary to ensure that rosters are marked before these votes are counted. After the polls close, the votes would be counted. They're not counted beforehand. Just like on election day, even though ballots are put into the machine before the polls close, nobody knows the vote totals until it's over. So that's an overview of the bill and the proposed policy, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Ms. Fraser, we are going to take a vote here by two, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 on the list, and then a ninth that I know is a prominent testifier. And so we're going to have to limit this to a couple minutes per person, except for the next testifier, who I think, in all fairness, Mr. McGrath, I know that you were late to the list. If you care to testify, I think now would be a good time. And since I believe the others who are on the list, I think I'm right, that everyone else on the list is going to be supporting, is going to be testifying in favor, I'm willing to give you some extra time, not 10 minutes, but more than a couple minutes, and then the others will have to be limited. So if you care to testify now. Representative Vertel. Sure.
Can I just ask one quick question of Ms. Fraser?
Go ahead, Representative Vertel.
Thank you. Ms. Fraser, being that Minnesota already has the highest rate of election turnout in the nation, what problem are you trying to solve with this?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, the issues that we're trying to solve with this are voters in Minnesota already believe that we have early voting because of literature like the piece that was passed out, and because they hear in national news all the time, early voting has started, people are voting early, look at the early voting lines in Florida or wherever. So people already believe that we have this system, is the first thing. The second thing is that early voting is substantially less expensive to administer than in-person absentee balloting. And if you pass legislation to allow for no excuse absentee balloting, the number of absentee ballots, both in person and by mail, will increase. And it only makes sense to allow for that increase in a way that provides for the most efficient administration of the election. It also provides peace of mind to voters who don't need to worry that because of a mistake on their paperwork, their ballot will be rejected, or because of a mistake in filling out their ballot, their votes won't count, because they'll be able to put their ballot into the ballot counter.
Any follow-up, Representative Riddle? Okay. Mr. McGrath, I do think you're entitled to some leeway, given that we want some balance here. So if you just want to take a few minutes, we're going to give everyone else a couple, but you'll get more than that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you very much for accommodating me. I know I was late to get onto the agenda, so I do appreciate the accommodation. I'm Dan McGrath, President of Minnesota Majority. I'm here to testify against House File 334, which I'm sure is a shock to most of you. Besides being extraordinarily dangerous for election integrity, this bill is unconstitutional. Article 7, Section 7 of the Minnesota Constitution states, "The official year for the state of Minnesota commences on the first Monday in January in each year, and all terms of office terminate at that time. The general election shall be held on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November in each even-numbered year. We simply cannot conduct general election voting prior to or after the constitutionally designated election day. The Constitution wasn't designed for elections to be held for weeks on end. They take place on one day. I raised this issue in the State Elections Committee, and Senate research staff looked into it and produced a memo about this issue. They found only one state had had early voting challenged based upon the state's constitution. That was Maryland. The Maryland Supreme Court struck down early voting as unconstitutional for violating the state's constitution. Their constitution has a similar statement about when Election Day will be held as Minnesota's. Even if the bill were constitutional, which I would say it certainly is not, the proposal is a threat to the integrity of our already weak and vulnerable election system. This bill doesn't just permit early voting by registered people. It allows the use of Election Day registration and vouching for 15 days prior to Election Day. There will be no citizen election judges that we currently employ for Election Day registration, so we'll be putting our faith entirely in our government with no citizen oversight for the counting of ballots and accepting of ballots. There will be no opportunity for partisan poll challengers, no realistic opportunity for partisan poll challengers to be present for 15 days on end for early voting to take place. It's hard enough for the political parties to get people to monitor elections for one day. 15 would be a daunting and impossible task. So we would be throwing away all of the mechanisms of citizen oversight, including Election Day registration and vouching for up to 15 people. One person can vouch for up to 15 people for 15 days on end. We know that vouching has been abused in the state of Minnesota. In the 2010 election, students with an organization called Organizing for America were caught systematically vouching for people they did not know at a university precinct in Minneapolis. One of the volunteers said, well, I didn't know this was wrong to do. I was just doing what the organizers, her higher-ups, told her to do. It was an organized, systematic conspiracy to commit vouching fraud. In the 2004 election, an organization named America Coming Together published and publicized a vouching fraud scheme exactly like what Organizing for America was doing. We have had eyewitness reports from election judges and poll challengers all over the state who have observed this process or observed this crime of vouching fraud in process. We'll be opening the doors to multiply the possibility of vouching fraud by a factor of 15 with this bill. This is an insane combination of systems. There are several states that have early voting. There are only two that have Election Day registration and vouching. Two. Mixing Election Day registration and vouching with early voting, it's got to be the worst idea that I've ever heard from Minnesota's election system. Beth Fraser testified that the statewide voter registration will be updated when people use early voting, so it will prevent them from voting more than once. But Ms. Fraser is presuming that the people who are going into vote are providing their own name, when if they were going to attempt to vote more than once, they can provide any name they want, any name and address they want with the vouching system. Since we're not checking ID, we're not verifying voters' identity or eligibility, and the votes cannot be retrieved once they go into the ballot box with early voting. Once it's in the system, even if you find out later, no such person, no such address, that vote can't be retrieved, it's already been counted. So we can't have every single convenience for making voting easier, and at the same time have none of the features that other states employ to make cheating harder. Unless the objective, of course, is to be governed by the candidates or the party that cheats the best. That sounds like, if that's progress, that's progressing towards a banner republic. All this bill accomplishes is to make the window for fraud exponentially wider while casting aside the meager protections we already have in place with citizen oversight. I don't believe there's any way to make this bill workable. I'd urge the members of the committee to vote against this serious threat to fair and reliable elections.
Thank you, Mr. McGrath. Appreciate it. Representative Winkler, brief question. Thank you, Mr. McGrath. Appreciate it. Representative Winkler, brief question.
Mr. Chair, I guess you can deal with this as you want. I just want to address the constitutional argument that Mr. McGrath raised, but maybe we can wait until afterwards. I'm not sure it's actually a question we both had the same memo. But
go ahead.
Well, I'd just like to point out, members, that there has been extensive litigation on Election Day under federal courts interpreting federal law and the federal constitution, finding that early voting is not in violation of language that anticipates an election on one particular day. 32 states have early voting. Senate research pointed out that 9 states in the Midwest, our neighbors right around us, have similar types of language in their constitution that Minnesota has, and they have early voting. The one state that's gone the other direction is Maryland, and the language in their constitution is not identical to Minnesota's, and it's not applicable to us anyway. So I think this idea that a system of early voting is unconstitutional is just not supported by the cases that have interpreted state and federal law.
Let's go to the next testifier. Thank you, Representative Winkler. Mr. Mansky, and I'm sorry, folks, you know, we have 17 minutes left, so I'm going to have to limit people to a couple minutes per testifier. Mr. Mansky, introduce yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Joe Mansky from the Ramsey County Election Office, and I think the members have a handout from me, the purpose of which is to demonstrate that during these 15-day periods that are contemplated in the bill, that a substantial number of people are already coming in person to vote. And for the people who vote prior to Election Day, they vote in a polling place. Our office, in fact, is a polling place. For example, if Representative Mariani wanted to vote prior to Election Day, he would come to the polling place in our office. Our polling place has ballots. It has the list of voters. It has voting booths. It also has election judges who are on duty every day during this period. The one thing our polling place doesn't have is our ballot counter, and that's really what we're looking to accomplish if you choose to enact this bill into law. All we want is to get our ballot counter into the polling place that we have in our building and at Roseville and Shoreview and White Bear Township and all the other places where we are already conducting voting prior to Election Day. The reason for this is twofold. Number one, it's more efficient for us to process your ballots if you put your ballot directly into the ballot counter. Currently, using the absentee process with the envelopes, we have to run through a 22-step process to get from the point where you sign the envelope and we actually count your ballot. By going to the process contemplated in this bill, we reduce that to 9 steps, and as you heard Representative Bernardi say earlier, my estimate is that we will cut our costs in half. And again, when you look at the numbers that we're dealing with and with the numbers that we anticipate getting if, again, this bill and the no-excuse absentee bill are enacted, being able to cut the cost by a half per voter transaction is no small matter. And Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take any questions about that.
Thank you, Mr. Mansky. Any members' questions or comments? If not, the next testifier, we're going to skip a couple here or go in a different order here. I'd like to see if Christine Stone, if Ms. Stone could come up and testify. Thank you, Ms. Stone. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Stone.
Thank you.
Just introduce yourself for the record, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify today. I am Christine Stone. I'm a member of the grassroots election advocacy team of AARP. I'm 92 years old. I have never missed a vote since I turned 21. In fact, since in 1994, I voted in the same precinct near my home in Maplewood, Minnesota. I'm here to lend support to House File 334 legislation to institute an early voting system in Minnesota. Seniors take voting very seriously, especially here in Minnesota. Minnesota has a long tradition of ensuring that our voting system is accessible, and we are extremely proud of our level of voter participation. As we look to the future, this proud tradition must continue. AARP supports efforts to improve voting procedures that encourage and promote maximum participation in the voting process by expanding the range of voting choices. We believe that our state population ages. It's important to continue to modernize our election system to enable our older population to have easy access to the polls. Many older citizens want to physically go to the polls. I, for one, look forward to Election Day, to getting out of the house and going down and taking part in the voting process. I will continue to do that as long as I possibly can. I'm reminded it was 92 years ago some brave ladies gave us the right to vote. But for many other older Minnesotans, getting out of the house on Election Day can be harder than it seems. Finding someone to take you when you want to go can be hard. Standing in a long line on election days can be hard. Many seniors are afraid of the unpredictable weather. Others are afraid of falling or getting sick. I know there will come a time when I might be able to not go to out on election day. Older Minnesotans want to age in place, meaning we want to stay in our homes for as long as possible. This trend means more of us will need flexibility in the voting system. That's why AARP believes that early voting, as well as the no-excuse absentee balloting, go hand in hand and are important tools for older voters, much like pre-boarding an airplane. Those tools allow older folks more time to vote under a less stressful condition. Across the
Thank
country,
you.
The majority
Ms.
of
Ms. Stone, could you wrap up? I just need you to wrap up pretty quickly, the testimony. Thank you.
I have one more.
Go ahead, real quickly.
Okay. We believe it's time for Minnesota to enact these common sense voting changes, too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Stone. I appreciate it. The next testifier.
Just a real quick question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Verdahl.
Ms. Stone? Ms. Stone? You don't have to answer this if you don't wish, but did you vote for Wilkie or Roosevelt?
I voted for Roosevelt.
That's great. Very nice. Next testifier will be from the League of Women Voters. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Laura Frederick Wang, and I am the Executive Director of the League of Women Voters Minnesota. We support House File 334, which establishes early voting in Minnesota. This bill will put Minnesota in the company of 32 other states and would allow Minnesota voters the same options in ensuring that they are able to vote that are afforded to those state citizens. Our support for early voting comes from our experiences helping Minnesotans to vote. In the days leading up to the election, our office ran a hotline that took calls from voters who had a wide variety of questions about elections and how they were going to cast their ballot. Many of those calls were simple, but some were much more complicated and reflected the complexity of many people's day-to-day situations. This included people with unexpected family or work commitments, as well as people who needed rides to the polls. Our experience helping Minnesotans vote has demonstrated two important things to us. Minnesotans want to vote, and they take their responsibility to do so seriously. But we've also seen that increasingly unpredictable work schedules, the complications of managing two-income families, and the sometimes challenging health needs of an aging population require some changes in our election system to keep voting accessible. Early voting would have helped people like the caller to our office, who learned on the Friday before the election that she would need surgery the following week, but it was too late to get an absentee ballot sent by mail. It would have helped people like the woman I talked to the week before the election, who would not learn until the following Monday if she was going to need to travel for her job. It also would have helped many people we spoke to who did not have easy access to transportation and struggled with getting a ride to the polls the day of election, but would have had some more options if they could have voted in the days or weeks prior. The volume of calls we get in our office leading up to Election Day is a testament to the fact that Minnesotans take voting very seriously. The attitude of the people we talked to, who were unsure of how they were going to get to the polls, was not casual, nor was it frivolous. They were people who felt voting was important, and they were very excited to do so. But they were also very aware of the complications that they had in front of them and the complications that could arise. Early voting is one tool that could help people work around those complications. This proposal also would help reduce the congestion on election days. As this committee heard previously, the 2012 election in Minnesota involved long lines and long waits in some areas, creating problems for both voters and election administrators and judges.
LWV Minnesota believes that voting is not just a right, but it is also a responsibility. Election Day certainly is an important civic tradition and an important part of how we fulfill that responsibility. But the strength of our democracy is not dependent on the day, the time, or the method through which we cast our ballot, but in creating a process that is reflective of the 21st century and ensures that any eligible citizen who wants to vote can vote. We would like to thank the committee for your time and urge your support for House File 334.
Thank you very much. The next testifier, unless there are urgent questions from members, the next testifier will be from the League of Minnesota Cities.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair and members. We'll be very brief. My name is Ann Lindstrom. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. And the League of Minnesota Cities is a 100-year organization that represents 834 of the 853 cities statewide. And we have an official policy supporting the establishment of early voting for reasons that my guest here can go ahead and explain.
Excuse me. I'm Jane Cross. I'm the city clerk and election administrator for the city of Blaine. I'm also a member of the Municipal Clerks and Finance Officers Association of Minnesota. I thank you for the opportunity to come here and speak about early voting. This past year was the first year we did absentee voting at the city of Blaine, and it was quite overwhelming, and the administrative time and extra overtime was extremely expensive. We found that early voting would be beneficial in the fact that it would cut down our expenses, but also I know from firsthand experience people coming in to do absentee voting are truly there to do early voting. Absentee voting would still be available by mail. I cannot tell you how many times I've overheard people say when they're in our city hall to absentee vote that they don't want to go to the polls and stand in line. They would prefer to vote in person and vote early. Minnesota voters truly believe absentee voting is early voting. I've been administering elections in our city since 1998, and I can assure you that the utmost security, protocol, and ethics are practiced in our city. The citizens, my job, and reputation depend on it, and it would remain so with early voting.
Thank you very much for your testimony, both of you. Any questions for members? If not, we'll get through it quickly. Members, thanks for your indulgence. We're almost done. Next, Ms. Hoops from the Minnesota Disability Law Center. Or is someone else here from the Minnesota Disability Law Center? Just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony in 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Justin Page, and I'm a staff attorney at Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid and the Minnesota Disability Law Center. The Minnesota Disability Law Center is a federally mandated protection and advocacy system for individuals with disabilities. We represent individuals with all types of disabilities throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 334. Unfortunately, individuals with disabilities vote at a much lower rate than the general population. We believe this bill will make it easier for individuals with disabilities to vote. Its adoption will encourage people with disabilities to more fully engage with the voting process. Now, current law allows people with disabilities to vote early via absentee voting, either in person or using the mail. The law correctly recognizes that people with disabilities may have a difficult time getting to the poll on election days for a number of reasons, including lack of accessible and available transportation, unpredictable weather, and polling places that may not be all that accessible. We believe early voting will benefit with individuals with disabilities by allowing those who choose to vote in person, absentee to vote like everybody else, and more fully participate in the voting process. Currently, individuals with disabilities voting in person absentee fill out the paperwork for the absentee ballot, then fill out the ballot and hand it to an election official, where it's not counted until the polls close on election day. If there is an error in the person's ballot or paperwork, there is no guarantee that his or her vote will be counted. However, if early voting were implemented, individuals with disabilities would be able to go into an early voting location, which would be accessible, and then put his or her ballot in the ballot counter and ensure that his or her vote is counted.
Sir, can you wrap up your testimony?
Just we believe early voting is a good thing, and thank you for allowing me to testify. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. The next testifier, unless there are any urgent questions or comments from members, we have two more. Jeremy Schrader from Common Cause of Minnesota. And the final one, if he could be ready to testify, is Mr. Hager from Education Minnesota. Mr. Schrader, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeremy Schrader, and I'm the executive director of Common Cause Minnesota, a national nonpartisan government watchdog group. I'm here today to express Common Cause's strong support for early voting here in Minnesota and for House File 334. Nationally, 32 states and the District of Columbia currently have some form of early voting. We have seen nationally this number grow because of it over the last few election cycles, because early voting helps minimize the numerous problems citizens have while trying to cast their vote. Two of these problems specifically. First, the extra time afforded by early voting helps take the pressure off an election system by reducing the flood of voters which come out in one day. Second, an early voting process allows individuals to resolve voting problems with their voting eligibility. Under the current system of Minnesota, voters have a very small window of time to work out any issues with their voter registration record. Early voting would give them the time to fix those problems in a reasonable way. Finally, I'd just like to close by saying democracy works best when we are all allowed to participate, and voting is the most important way that we can do that. Voting should be as easy as possible for everyone. House File 334 will help Minnesotans use the right to vote, and I urge you to vote yes to 334.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schrader, and thanks for your brevity. We have one more testifier, and that's Mr. Hager from Education Minnesota. Mr. Hager, welcome to the committee, and just state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is James Hager. I'm here to testify on behalf of Education Minnesota and Minnesota's 70,000 educators, and to ask you to support House File 334. In preparation for this hearing, I spoke with several educators from around the state. Every one of the members I spoke with is either at or on their way to work by 7 a.m. on Tuesday mornings. After they leave school, they inevitably spend part of their evening grading tests, reading papers, or preparing for class the next day. It doesn't count driving home, which for many can be long distances, picking up their kids, making dinner, or taking care of their home. All this leaves very little time for voting, especially if there are lines which this committee has heard previous testimony about. And the options available to other people, going during lunch or on a break, or during the two-hour break that employers are required to give people on election day, are not options for our members. This is all to say that in this day and age, our members, like so many people in this room and workers around the state, are very busy. Voting on a Saturday or a free evening a week or two before the election is an important option to give voters and a way to encourage increased participation. In closing, Mr. Chair and members, we support this bill and we encourage its passage. Thank you very much for your time and this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Hager. Members, that concludes the formal testimony. I would just say there may be member comments, and I understand we aren't all on the same page on this one, which is somewhat of a rarity for this committee. But it's important, I think, that we keep this idea in the mix. And because of deadlines coming up, I think that's important. So I understand there's not unanimity here. But Representative Bernardi, I'll give you the last word unless there are comments, particular comments from members. I see Representative. I see that Representative Johnson, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, question I have is you talked about shortening the time frame for absentee balloting 2 weeks to shut it off at that point. Is that correct?
Actually, Representative Johnson, absentee voting by mail will continue, but in person at the 15th day before the election, that will be early voting, and you can confirm that.
Okay, so my big concern I have on this, Mr. Chair, if that was being shut off, it would disenfranchise our military and overseas other personnel that are overseas, including some of our citizens.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. If there are no other member comments, Representative Bernardi, I'll give you the last word, and then we will take a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's it's important that this is on the table because as people are learning more about it, they're gaining a better understanding and feeling more comfortable with it from both sides of the aisle, as well as constituents are weighing in on this and feel that it's very important for our state to move to early voting and have it really be voter integrity, giving voters confidence, and giving voters access. And bottom line is we're being fiscally responsible and being good stewards of our resources and streamlining this process. So I encourage your support.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. If there are no other member comments at this point, there will be opportunities later, believe me. Then Representative Bernardi renews her motion that House File 334 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on State Government Finance. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
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 Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Just a reminder about Thursday. Thursday, we have two minor bills, but then the really big work of this committee will be marking up our omnibus. The proposed DE1, which is the omnibus bill, was posted on Friday, so as to give members 6 days to come up with any ideas, questions, concerns, criticisms, amendments, and so please take advantage of us. So we will be primarily using the time on Thursday, our last day before first deadline, to mark up and pass an omnibus bill. Thanks, members. The committee is adjourned.